Hey, you want that to go?
And yes, we'll take Todd Zwillick to go. Takeaway Washington correspondent begins our segment this morning. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, good morning, John.
So let's begin with news you can use from down there in Washington. There are people waiting for their unemployment checks. Are they going to get any news this week?
They look like they're going to get some good news. As many as 400,000 people waiting for checks since Congress has spent a couple of weeks bickering about just a one-month extension for unemployment insurance and COBRA subsidy insurance and a couple of other small things. So about 200,000 people.
Small to you.
Small, right. And therein shows the problem. About 400,000 people waiting for checks, and yet to Congress this boils down to a spat. Really, sort of a residual spat ongoing about paying for things and a spat from bad feelings about healthcare. But about 200,000 people last week had their benefits expire, another 200,000 this week. But a procedural motion passed yesterday evening as the Senate filtered back into town, 60-34, which means by the end of the week, in fact, probably by Wednesday, I would guess, they should clear a one-month extension of these unemployment benefits, and the checks should start going retroactively. So people will get all their money. It's just they had to spend a couple of weeks to get it.
So get a bigger check. But yes. Why not extend the whole coverage for the entire year? Why do this month to month? Democrats
want to extend it for an entire year because you would get out of this month for month tit for tat. There's a question of how to pay for it. Where do you raise taxes or where do you cut elsewhere? Democrats say you don't have to pay for it. This is an emergency. This is the time to deficit spend. You know, we just give people benefits. They don't have 60 votes generally to do that, so it's a bit complicated. And also, I think, John, once you extend unemployment benefits for a year, you get into an argument of what is the political end of the recession. Hmm. You know, we have the economic definition of the end of the recession, but when is politically the recession over? And you extend it for a year, you put off that sort of political end of the recession for an entire year. So that becomes a difficult vote of when you decide just to extend it and forget about it for a year.
Right. Well, we were talking with Louise Story how complicated it is for economists to come up with that. It's even more complicated politically. Let's talk politically about more discussion on the retirement of John Paul Stevens on the Supreme Court. Did the White House actually add a name, float a trial balloon yesterday?
They did. Well, they tooketh one away and they added one. One name that was taken off the list 100%, don't even think about it, was Hillary Rodham Clinton. Her name had been floating around as a possible Supreme Court nominee. Robert Gibbs, the White House press secretary, shot that trial balloon out of the air yesterday. But at the same time, the White House confirmed that a Ninth Circuit court judge from Montana, 56-year-old Sidney Thompson, is now being considered one of about 10 people, mostly judges, being considered by the White House. And the thing about him is nobody in Washington had heard this name except the really down and dirty circuit court watchers. So this is a classic trial balloon. You announce the name, you let the wires know you're looking at him, and then we all scurry and find out a little bit about him.
Any information on why? Is this a Western vote-getting kind of thing? Is he mainstream? Is he Republican? Is he conservative?
He was nominated to the Ninth Circuit by Bill Clinton and confirmed in 1996. From the decisions I've been able to look up, mostly non-controversial, except one that seems to be roiling court watchers on the right, which was a 2002 decision called Summerlin, in which he seemed to rule that juries in death penalty cases, that only juries can decide sort of the facts of the case and procedural motions in death penalty cases. It basically meant fewer people could be executed, which roiled a lot of people on the right. From what I can tell, mostly non-controversial decisions besides that. It's definitely a nod to the West, however, and definitely probably a nod to the white male set, which you don't see a whole lot of those in the trial balloon set of the 10 who are being considered
embattled
right now.
White male
set. A former community college professor, by the way. Correct.
Yes,
Sidney Thomas, that's who we're discussing. The latest name being floated by the White House as a replacement for John Paul Stevens. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Our last takeout comes from our listeners. Many of you joined the conversation on our website, thetakeaway.org, and on our Facebook page in response to this discussion about the retirement of Supreme Court Justice Paul Stevens and who might replace him. And if we do find a replacement, what's the one quality you were looking for? James Gormley wrote, "It will be impossible to find a person with views and a record everyone could love. The challenge is not finding the perfect candidate or the universally acceptable candidate, but in finding the one candidate who has, on balance and overall, the legal expertise, the judicial probity, the fairness and objectivity that will best suit him."
We also talked about states considering expanding some form of gambling to deal with budget gaps. Massachusetts being the focus of our conversation yesterday, and actually later on this morning, they got some advice from a listener partway across the country.
This is Tom calling from Detroit. It seems to me that the people of Massachusetts who are interested in gambling should come and visit Detroit and see how much gambling has affected our economy and employment, which would seem to be not at all.
And in fact, one of the casinos in downtown Detroit is looking into bankruptcy. Sharon Langan on our Facebook page thinks expanding gambling laws is not a very good solution. She writes, I live in Middleborough, Massachusetts, a town that went through a long, expensive, and combative process towards a casino. Selectmen thought it would save the town. The tribe rep turned out to be a felon. Money was wasted on a town meeting that began and ended as a political circus. There was neighbor versus neighbor acrimony. After all that, no casino. There is no easy way out of budget problems, and this includes gambling. We want to keep this conversation going. In just a minute, we're going to hear a follow-up report to yesterday's segment. We'll find out how the community of Norwich, Connecticut, has been changed by the development of two casinos on nearby Indian reservations. If you want to weigh in on this issue, give us a call at 8778-MY-TAKE, or you can leave a comment at our website, thetakeaway.org.
That's an interesting comment from Detroit. I guess you have to have money to gamble it. You know what I mean?
That's right.
And so in the middle of a recession, probably a casino isn't a
great idea.
Casinos are
not recession-proof.
Right. By the way, we've got hundreds of ideas for the Takeaway T-shirt contest. We asked for your best six-word slogans on the news. We've narrowed it down to the best 10. Here's your turn. Some of the nominees.
Cross the tracks, not the aisle.
Let's look at things upside down.
Finally, I can afford an illness.
Soundbite, bite.
See them all and vote for your favorite. The best will be on our new T-shirts and some slick designs there. That's all at thetakeaway.org.